Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You can't go out there and you can't work out. You can't show up on time. You can't practice. You can't want to go out there and win. You shouldn't be here. Because this is a privilege. It's the greatest job in the world. You get to go out and play a game. And if you can't care enough, even in week 17, even when you're trash, when you're 4-11, if you can't care enough to go out there and give everything you've got and try your hardest, that's bullshit.
Impressive speech from J.J. Watt after one of the many Houston Texans losses in 2020. As expected, his final season with the Houston Texans. News that broke Friday morning, Peter, just after we wrapped up, not long after that. First, it was the Pouncey Twins retiring, and then they got to enjoy the spotlight for, 45 minutes. J.J. Watt announces that he is out in Houston. Good morning. Welcome back. Chris Sims off this week. I tried to explain to him last week, all we do is sit and talk about football. It's not like you need some time off, but he apparently needed a break from me. So, Peter, you have to deal with me today. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mike. You know, when I saw the Watt news last week, I wrote my column. This would have been now 8 days ago. I wrote my column that, you know, just listening to some chatter at the Super Bowl, reading the tea leaves, I thought that J.J. Watt was going to try to talk his way out of Houston. And, you know, it turns out that as I wrote that, it was already happening. And on Friday, I really think what happened here, Mike, and as I wrote my column today, I think it's probably pretty likely that Nick Caserio, the general manager of the Texans, said, whoa, wait a minute. We could probably get something for this guy, even if he wants to pick out a few teams that he'd agree to get traded to. Let's look around. Now, that's just my educated guess. I don't have that in stone, but Nick Caserio's not married to J.J. Watt. And, but I do think that in the end, intelligence prevailed. You know, J.J. Watt has been fantastic for this franchise as a player and off the field. And I just don't think that they should have held him hostage for the sake of getting a fourth or fifth round draft choice, maybe a third.
Well, fantastic as a player, a loyal contributor to the team for a decade, and also inching toward, as you surmised, a potentially ugly effort to get what he wanted. We saw some tweets recently. We saw some support that he expressed for the equipment manager who was unceremoniously dumped, the latest in a growing line of Texans employees who are now former Texans employees. And I would suspect that he made it clear, or maybe didn't have to make it clear, that if he didn't get what he wanted, he wasn't going to be as quiet and discreet as Deshaun Watson has been. We'll talk about those two situations coming up. Before we get to that, though, hear it straight from the man himself. In the event that you didn't see it on Friday. Here's J.J. Watt taking to social media to let the world know that his time in Houston has come to an end.
I have sat down with the McNair family, and I have asked them for my release, and we have mutually agreed to part ways at this time. I came here 10 years ago as a kid from Wisconsin who'd never really been to Texas before, and now I can't imagine my life without Texas in it. The way that you guys have treated me, besides draft night, I mean, you guys booed me on draft night, but every day after that, you treated me like family. And I truly feel like you're my family. Since that day, I have tried to do everything in my power to work and earn your respect and try and make you proud on and off the field. I'm excited and looking forward to a new opportunity, and I've been working extremely hard. But at the same time, it is always tough to move on. And I just want you guys to know that I love you. I appreciate you. I appreciate the McNair family for giving me, drafting me and giving me my first opportunity in the NFL. Thank you, Houston. I love you.
And that was it, and that was that for J.J. Watt. And he said at one point, too, on Friday, Peter, there would be no press conference, which seemed a little bit unusual to me. 10 years, easy to set it up on Zoom, get J.J. Watt, get Cal McNair, get Nick Caserio, get David Culley, maybe even a little 15-minute warm-up routine from Jack Easterby, some of his comedic stylings to get things going. And none of that. No press conference. And it just makes me wonder, what's the current mood between Watt and the organization? Everything's changed as far as he's concerned. And my guess would be, and this is throw a dart, close your eyes, and see if it hits the board. I don't think he wanted one.
I think you're absolutely right, Mike. You know, when has J.J. Watt shied away from the media? You know, I mean, he's been one of those public guys in the NFL over the last decade. Mike, look, you are the king. I am a distant 42nd to you when it comes to looking at a video like that from J.J. Watt and reading the underlying meaning of his words. And you know what my underlying meaning was reading, listening to those words? There's not a lot of love lost right now between me and the Texans. It just, there was no warm and fuzzy, I owe everything to this organization. I talked to the McNairs and we have decided to part ways. I mean, no, I'd really like to thank them. I'd really, you know, whatever. It's like thanking the people of Houston. I think J.J. Watt is a very smart guy. He doesn't do anything unintentionally. Why does he not want to have a press conference? Why doesn't he not want to talk to a bunch of the locals? And I'm sure he may eventually. I just thought the whole thing was odd, as you say.
And I suspect at this point in the Texans' existence, they don't relish any additional opportunities to be grilled about Deshaun Watson, because that was inevitable. That would have come up, and that would have overshadowed potentially the J.J. Watt exit press conference. Not that that was the prime factor, but I think for both sides, if this is going to be about Deshaun Watson and not J.J. Watt, what's the point of doing it? But let's keep it about J.J. Watt, Peter, because you said something that intrigued me. I read it early this morning in your latest Football Morning in America column, which is available for anyone who would like to see it at profootballtalk.com. We ask that you at least wait until after the show, though. We've got some business to do here. You can read it later or during a break, although there's a lot there, so it may take a couple of commercial breaks for you to get through all of it. Bless you. J.J. Watt and his contract. 1 year left, $17.5 million. And as you said, Nick Caserio still new, brand new, not on the job a month, if a month, barely more than a month. This is an asset. And this is how general managers think of their teams. It dehumanizes the players. Don't get that wrong. But at the same time, these are chess pieces. And this is a piece that could have been, with cooperation, if they had finessed it, and it would have potentially required a better relationship than the one that currently exists between Watt and the Texans. he reduces his salary to a range that would be suitable to someone who would trade for it. You work it all out. You let him pick his destination. You get a sixth-round pick, a fifth-round pick. You get something. You get something for this asset that you have purchased through a contract that still has a year left on it. You get nothing by cutting him. You don't get a compensatory draft pick. That only happens when a player leaves via free agency. You get nothing in return when you cut a guy. And that's what surprised me, that there was no effort. And if there was an effort, they kept it very quiet. And I suspect that Caserio would have found a way to leak it to make it look like, you know, he understands that you try to get something for every guy you have under contract, even the guys that you don't plan to keep anyway. But they didn't even go down that path. And my guess is, number one, the McNair family thought that they owed it to J.J. Watt to let him go if he wanted to go at this point in his career. Number two,
agreed.
Watt probably wasn't going to cooperate with that, because all he had to say is, no, I'm not doing it. No, I'm not reducing my salary. Either try to trade $17.5 million or cut me come March 17.
Yeah, I think, first of all, the McNair family, Janice McNair, the widow of the late Bob McNair, who founded the franchise, and her son Cal McNair, who is now running the team, in essence, I think they looked at the contributions that J.J. Watt had made to the city. Obviously, the $41.6 million raised in Hurricane Harvey relief. It touched every part of the city in Harris County. It was an amazing job by Watt in kind of summoning the best in people around the world. I think that's number one. And number two, this is a guy who's been the best player in the history of the franchise. He wanted out. And quite honestly, Mike, there are some times where you say, because look, as I wrote in my column, I talked to several people around the league and asked, what is J.J. Watt worth? Most of them said nothing at $17.5 million a year after missing 32 games in the last 5 years due to injury. And then last year playing the season and getting and having five sacks. So, you know, he's not going to bring much in return, if anything. But obviously he would have to fix his contract. And I think that some of the contract would have to be incentive-based. And for a guy like J.J. Watt, who's the three-time defensive player of the year, and he played 16 games last year, I think he really would have chafed at that. What's interesting now that the 17.5 basically doesn't exist anymore, you know, it basically, you can make up whatever salary you want. I think this is going to be an incentive-laden contract, and J.J. Watt is going to tell Tom Condon, his agent, to essentially, here are the teams I want, try to make something happen. Money's not that big a deal to me. And oh, by the way, I'd really love to play for the Packers.
And I want to get to that in a minute, because I have some thoughts about where he could land and some of the practical complications that may go along with it. When we think back to Friday, we saw the J.J. Watt video. We saw the statement that was issued by the Houston Texans. Cal McNair mobilized to speak to, as best I can tell, a very small handful of reporters. I noticed in your column today he spoke to you. He spoke to Shefty. He spoke to Ian Rappaport. I didn't get invited to participate. Gee, I can't say I'm stunned, given some of the opinions that we've crafted over the past few months about McNair and more specifically his right-hand man, Jack Easterby. But what did you gather from the conversation with McNair? And isn't it odd that Caserio didn't have anything to say to anyone?
Mike, it was, he was very nice. He said all the right things about J.J. Watt, was not going down the road to about Deshaun Watson other than to say he is a Texan and I expect that he will remain a Texan. What a great guy he's been for this franchise and this city. Basically, I read the stuff that he said to Ian and Adam on Friday, and I'm not saying he was reading it from a piece of paper, but it was the same stuff. And look, that's fine. It's absolutely fine. My only point about all of that is that I agree with you. I think that if J.J. Watt had not gotten his free release, had not gotten his freedom, I'm not saying it would have gotten ugly, but my opinion is that there's a chance, and a pretty good one, that Watt would have been outspoken in saying that what an organization this is in what is supposed to be, you know, a family-driven NFL, that, you know, I helped raise $41 million in a time of dire need for this city. We've, you know, with me playing here, we've won four of the last six division championships. I won three defensive players of the year. I'm the best player in the history of this franchise. And you're holding me hostage for a fifth or sixth round pick that might rise to a fourth? Who knows? I don't even know what it would be. But I do know that from taking the temperature of people around the NFL, there was not going to be a lucrative market for J.J. Watt.
Yeah, well, and especially not at that salary. And if you're going to be negotiating a lower salary anyway, just do it as a free agent. And I think that the Texans, who have done many things in recent months that could not be characterized fairly and reasonably as smart, did the smart thing in not picking the fight with J.J. Watt. It can be postured as them doing the right thing. The right thing was to not make themselves look even worse by getting into a fight with J.J. Watt that they would lose nationally and, more importantly, locally, at a time when the perception of that team in Houston is as low as it's ever been since they joined the NFL 19 years ago. Getting into a fight with J.J. Watt would have made it even worse. And you said something funny about Cal McNair. Not funny, like funny like a clown. Funny, intriguing. I had a flashback to the first time I ever heard Cal McNair speak. He did radio in Houston, the flagship down there, 610. And it was like he was reading off of a sheet of paper. When you said that about the comparison of the comments to you and to Shefty and to Ian, it when he was on radio, it sounded like he was reading straight from the talking points that someone else had given to him. So here's a glimpse of the talking points that made the rounds on Friday. Said Cal McNair on J.J. Watt and on the biggest issue currently involving the team, Deshaun Watson: it's not the right time to talk about the front office. It's all about J.J. and honoring him. There is a lot of misinformation out there. I'll leave it at that. Well, you wouldn't want to take advantage of an opportunity to clear up misinformation, would you? Today we want to focus on J.J. We don't want to focus. We do want to focus. Today we want focus on J.J. Deshaun is our quarterback. He's a Texan, and we expect him to remain a Texan, and we'll leave it at that. And a little more on J.J. before we pivot over to Deshaun. Even though J.J. Watt got a 33-day head start on free agency, Peter, the problem that he's going to face, I believe, is that with an unknown regarding what the salary cap is going to be, it's going to be difficult for his next suitor to know what it can afford to pay him. If it's 180, that's one contract. If they somehow get the TV deals done, and you mentioned that as well today in Football Morning in America, and I think one of the motivations is have a giant $100 billion pile of money that they could shift around and maybe pump up the salary cap a little bit this year, then you could pay him a little bit more. But I think for some of these teams, they may need to wait and see what the cap's going to be before they can make a meaningful offer to J.J. Watt.
Mike, you said it exactly right. I mean, there is no way that any team right now can know exactly where it is entering free agency until it knows the salary cap number. And I was told by somebody in Super Bowl week that this person thought that the announcement of these deals could be about a month away, or within a month, I think were the exact words. But what was so interesting about the conversations I've had about this TV deal is not that there's a race to the finish line. It isn't like, oh, we have to get it done now. But I think for the first time, you are seeing teams look at the NFL office and say, in essence, figuratively, hurry up and finish this. We could really use some help this year. And so I think you're going to see the TV deals get done by, let's say, pick a date, like March 10th, so that going into free agency, you know, which starts, I think, if I'm not mistaken, on March 16th or 17th. But to take actual exact numbers into free agency rather than just guessing what it would be. And where that really would influence, you know, a guy like J.J. Watt is, let's say a team that is really not in great cap shape, you know, not has millions to spend, like, say, the Indianapolis Colts. If it's a team really snug up against the cap and has a lot of internal problems anyway, they're going to need extra money to spend on J.J. Watt. That's why I think the TV deals, there's a lot of motivation from teams to the league to get that deal done by about March 10th.
You know, the other wild card, and I'm not sure they're going to have answers by March 17, the anticipated ticket sales, the anticipated attendance for 2021.
Right.
That is a way that they can have greater certainty about the money that's going to flow through the coffers this year and that they could then use to pump up the cap. But this urgency to get the TV deals done by the middle of March seems to be part of a broader play to at least make it a little more fair for some of these teams. And you can say, well, hey, if you decided to go overboard on the cap in past years and you're in a horrible spot like the Saints are, they're not in as bad of a spot as they were because of the Drew Brees restructuring. But no one expected this. This isn't something you planned for. They do contracts, Peter, planning for the cap to keep going up. This is, if it goes to 180, an $18.2 million depression per team that no one ever really budgeted for, planned for, anticipated, and that's why I think it becomes important. But that's why it's going to, as a practical matter, delay J.J. Watt's final destination until people know what the cap is, because he falls in that very broad gulf of guys who aren't superstars. He was, but he's not now at 32, and given his injury history and given the obvious reduction in skills you're going to see when you've been banged on and double and triple teamed all your career, you're not going to go out and just write your own number. You have to wait. And the rookies, the younger guys, their salaries are set in stone because they're so low. He's in this middle class that is going to get squeezed by the cap. And the question is, how squeezed is he going to get? And we don't know. And we won't know. So I suspect Tom Condon's going to have that small universe of teams. And it's going to come down to who can pay what and when they know. And it may be that the team that wants to get him is going to have to take a leap of faith and say, we're just going to put this number on him. And if we have to come up with cap space somewhere else, so be it, if they want him badly enough to sign him before March 17.
You know, and that's why when you look at a lot of the teams that might be logical suitors, to me, the Packers, because clearly I think he would want the Packers to be interested in him. You know, the Packers, according to Over the Cap, are at $203 million. The Chiefs are at $207 million. The Steelers, $215 million. You almost have to look at this and say, let's be a little bit realistic now on some of the teams that if you really want to jump out there and get an edge and try to find a team now, you know, we're talking more like, you know, say the Browns and the Colts. And the one other team that I think is really, really interesting, that's teetering right at the middle of solvency in the cap this year, is the Buffalo Bills. And to me, I look at what a smart general manager Brandon Bean is, and he has to know that, you know, for 1 year, it'd really be great to have the leadership and the play of J.J. Watt on a young and growing and very, you know, influential. He could be a very influential figure on that defense.
You had reposted a podcast that you did with J.J. Watt when the Texans had some practices with the Green Bay Packers, and it's pretty clear he'd like to play for the Packers. If it came down to Green Bay and Pittsburgh, where he could play with his two brothers, because I've thought all year long, you know, during football season when they played, and the idea of J.J. Watt wearing the Steelers uniform and lining up with TJ, how great that would be for them as a family. But between them and the Packers, which way do you think he would fall if it came? All other things equal, the numbers are equal, same offer, which team would he go with, the Packers or the Steelers?
My guess is he'd go with the Packers, and that's all it is, Mike. He'd go with the Packers because he grew up looking through the fence at training camp and saying, oh my God, these guys are larger than life figures. And there's something else about this, Mike. I've always sensed that J.J. Watt really, really loves his brother. And you know, that's not breaking news. And I wonder if the thought would go through his mind, if I show up in Pittsburgh, am I going to suck all the air out of the room, you know, because I'm the, you know, three-time defensive player of the year and I'm this popular guy and all that stuff. And I just wonder if he would look at that as sort of infringing on TJ's turf. Maybe he wouldn't. And maybe TJ would beg him to come. I don't know. But to me, I look at it and I just think Green Bay really makes so much sense. He wants to win this year. Green Bay's got an excellent chance to win this year. And the one other factor in this, Mike, is that I believe at the end of the day, although he does want his money, who doesn't? I believe at the end of the day, he's going to play for the team that he really wants to play for, if that team is interested in him. And again, could this be like a Charles Woodson at age 30 showing up in Green Bay? The difference is Charles Woodson still had some prime years left. J.J. Watt might have one, two at the outside prime years left, but he might not have any. We just don't know. So I don't know if Brian Gutekunst is the ultimate practical guy. I just don't know if he's going to say, yep, let's go get J.J. Watt. We'll have to wait and see.
And the signing of Charles Woodson came in 2006 after Brett Favre went public during one of his annual Will I or Won't I Retire musings. And Aaron Rodgers had already been on the roster for a year. But Favre complained that they didn't go out and sign guys in free agency. They hadn't had a marquee free agent since Reggie White. They signed Charles Woodson that year, and he ultimately contributed to a Super Bowl win by Aaron Rodgers. But this gets back to the topic of the week post-Super Bowl. Quarterbacks flexing their muscle, either publicly or privately, to get help, to compile a potential super team. What is Aaron Rodgers saying to Brian Gutekunst and or Matt LaFleur and or Mark Murphy about J.J. Watt? Were there text messages instantly sent? Let's go get this guy. That's part of this drama that we may not know the answer to, but it's playing out in the aftermath of Tom Brady gathering up all of his buddies in Tampa and winning a Super Bowl. Russell Wilson making it clear he'd like to do the same thing, if not in Seattle, somewhere else. Aaron Rodgers with that team that's 13-3 two consecutive years, couldn't punch through to the Super Bowl. Here's an opportunity to go get J.J. Watt. What will he say to management, and what will management say to him? And will that spur them to action, Peter?
I mean, I'm asking that more and more now, Mike. You know, in the wake of, you know, what Russell Wilson has said, in the wake of Deshaun Watson wanting out, you know, in the wake of Matthew Stafford getting his way and getting out. Mike, you know, the rules are being rewritten as we speak. And, I mean, we are going to see how really classic and classically trained general managers, quite honestly, like Brian Gutekunst in Green Bay, like John Schneider in Seattle, and, you know, who's, they both come from the Ron Wolf tree, essentially. Ron Wolf, Ted Thompson, those guys, you know, basically, you know what they believe, Mike? They believe what Ron Wolf believed. Hey, listen, I'll scout the players. Hey, coaches, you coach the players. And hey, players, you play. Okay, and I think that is what is sort of up for a little bit of a debate now. And that is up for how is this tectonic plate of classic old-time football, is it going to change? You know, Mike, when I covered the New York Giants in the 80s, you think of it now and it seems so preposterous that Bill Parcells had zero say on who the team was going to draft. Okay? It was George Young, the general manager, Tom Boyster, the personnel guy. That's who decided who the players were going to be. Then they gave them to Bill Parcells, and they belonged to Parcells. And it seems like such an odd way. And look, that franchise won two Super Bowls in that time. So who's to say it's wrong? All I'm saying is that it is so different from the way the NFL is done today. I can't imagine what George Young would have said if Phil Simms came out in an interview after they won the Super Bowl and said, you know, I want some more say in how we pick players around here. George Young would have still been laughing even though he's dead.
and that leads to the Deshaun Watson conundrum. Cal McNair making it known Friday that Deshaun Watson is still a Texan and we expect him to remain a Texan. Now, there's two ways to look at this. This is either an effort to convince anyone out there that the Texans want to try to keep him to drive up the trade value, or they really do want to try to keep him even though he won't return anyone's calls and seems to be dug into the point where he's not showing up. So the question then becomes, how long do they play this out? Do they need to see it happen? Do they need him to not show up for the offseason program, for training camp, for the preseason, whether and to what extent there is one, for the regular season? We know there will be one. Do they need him to boycott? Do they need to be in position to go take money back from him? Do they need to make him sit for all or part of a season? Is this Dwayne Brown, who made it clear he was never playing for the team again and then was traded right before the deadline? You get less if you wait until right before the deadline to trade Deshaun Watson than you would get if you get an auction together now. Find out all the teams Deshaun Watson is willing to play for because he has a no-trade clause. You can't just send him to anyone. Find out the teams he'd play for and get them all to the table, and you've got the Deshaun Watson contract, and start the bidding. That's the right way to maximize your value. I don't know that they're thinking about that. I feel like they want to try to win the tug of war. And the problem is, Peter, if they lose the tug of war, they're going to get a lot less for Deshaun Watson later than what they could get for him now.
Probably they'll get a lot less for Deshaun Watson later, but not certainly. What happens if they hold out all through this season and he just sits all through the year? And next year the Texans said, well, can't get any worse for us unless we get what we want, which is four ones and an established quarterback. And I'm making that up. I don't know what they would want at the end. But I keep thinking right now about the New York Jets, Mike. And I'm going to get back to your point in a second. I keep thinking about the New York Jets. And my question is, what would happen right now if you're the New York Jets and you're Joe Douglas and you say, we'll give you Sam Darnold, we'll give you the second pick in the draft, and we'll give you our one in each of the next two drafts. And the reason why that is a different kind of offer than virtually any other team can make is that includes the second pick overall this year, which means that if you're the Houston Texans, you can keep Sam Darnold for a year, let's say, and you can play him for a year, and then you can judge by draft day next year whether you're going to need to go get a quarterback. And what you do is you just save basically these ones. You trade you have enough ones so that you could trade up to get a good quarterback next year. But I think overall, Mike, I understand exactly what you're saying. The best offer could well be by April 25th this year before the draft. But if they don't get what they want, what they think is fair market value for something that literally has never been on the trade market ever, and that is a franchise quarterback who's 25 years old and who is playing at one of the highest levels of any quarterback in football. You can't say that about Steve Young, even though in 1987, he was 25 years old and got traded for a 2 and a 4. He was awful in Tampa because in large part his supporting cast was awful. But what I'm saying is no one in history has ever been this great, this young, at the most important position and gotten traded. So, I mean, it's almost, to me, unprecedented what the haul would be. And if I was a general manager, I wouldn't worry about the future. I would get my quarterback right now and I would surround him over the next few years with a team that could win a Super Bowl.
You've given me an idea. You've given me an idea that maybe it may be a great idea or it may be freaking nutty. We'll see. I'll let you judge. Here's my free advice to Joe Douglas, and he's guaranteed to get his money's worth. What I would do today, inspired by the conversation we had just now and a similar conversation we had on Friday, if I'm Joe Douglas, I'm writing a letter today to Nick Caserio, general manager of the Texans, and John Schneider, general manager of the Seahawks, and I am outlining the terms of a trade offer, right? And it's up to them to bite. And it's one offer. It's Sam Darnold plus the second overall pick in the draft plus the Jamal Adams first rounder from the Seahawks this year and the Jamal Adams first rounder from the Seahawks next year. I'll go three ones and Darnold. I put it on the table for both teams. Whoever accepts first gets it. And then I sit back and wait. Either way, I'm going to get Deshaun Watson, I'm going to get Russell Wilson, or I'm going to get nobody. But at least I tried.
Well, that's an interesting point. I think what I would do if I were trying to get Deshaun Watson is I would offer one more first-round pick. I wouldn't for Wilson. I think Wilson's 32, right, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And look, I'm not trying to be stingy. If push came to shove, I'd probably offer a fourth one for Russell Wilson. But I think that's a really interesting idea. I kind of like that idea, in fact. If you're sure, if you're absolutely sure that let's say there's only one thing that would make me not do that, Mike. And that is if I was madly in love with Justin Fields. If I was madly in love with Justin Fields, then I'd trade Darnold to Indianapolis for as much as I could get. And then I would draft Justin Fields, and I realize this might be impossible, but I would simply build the best offensive line that I could build, you know, over the next, say, two drafts, and I would win that way. Obviously, you got to do something with your defense and get a playmaker there, but I think that's even more important than getting a playmaker in the receiving corps for the New York Jets.
Well, look, a lot of it does come down to whether or not the Jets would prefer Watson over Russell Wilson. And that's a longer discussion because there is the 7-year age difference. But if you think Watson's the guy, the best way to leverage the Texans to give up Watson would be to make them realize there's one trade that's going to be made by the Jets. And it's going to be a lot. It's going to be Darnold plus the second overall pick plus two more first-round picks. And if the Seahawks take it, then it's gone forever. There's got to be a way for Douglas to take the initiative here. And it's the fact that Wilson, by all appearances, is inching toward wanting out. That turns it into not quite a full-blown buyer's market. But if Deshaun Watson's the only franchise quarterback who's currently available, and then all of a sudden there's two of them, that gives the teams looking to make the trade a little more leverage. It's just something to think about if you're the Jets. You can play this out a little bit more and play the Seahawks against the Texans and maybe get a little bit of a better deal to get one of them done. Now, both quarterbacks have no trade clauses. They would individually have to want to go to the Jets to make it happen. But it's something to consider because these are not going to be easy transactions for anyone to work out because the stakes are high, the compensation is high. And we'll see how that plays out. Let's take a break. We're way, way over. When we return, well, that first segment almost lasted as long as Chris Doyle's tenure with the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll break down what happened with them Thursday and then Friday night. And then Saturday morning, a little PS from the Jaguars. We'll talk about that next year on PFT Live.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat. protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Justin, and so good. Thousands of summer deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 60% on new arrivals from Vince, Rag & Bone, Adidas, Joe's, Marc Jacobs, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry for first dibs. Get your summer favorites up to 60% off at Nordstrom Rack today. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Yeah, I've known Chris for close to 20 years. Our relationship goes back to when I was at Utah, and he was the number one strength coach.
He had no reservations hiring him based on the allegations and what happened at Iowa, and why hire him instead of going in a different direction?
Oh, sure. I vet everyone on our staff, and like I said, the relationship goes back close to 20 years, and a lot of hard questions asked, a lot of vetting involved, and with all our staff. But we did a very good job vetting that one.
Are you at all concerned that him being in the building will impact your ability to attract free agents?
If I was, I wouldn't have hired him. Once again, I'll explain that if that becomes a question. The one thing I'm very confident is that I would imagine within a year or two we'll have the best sports performance team in the National Football League.
Well, they did some careful vetting of Chris Doyle, but apparently not enough. Or more accurately, Peter, they didn't anticipate the blowback. Now, Urban Meyer, I think, had an inkling. I watched very carefully his press conference from Thursday. And when the first question was coming about Chris Doyle, I detected a little mini smirk and that kind of nervous scratching of his face. And he got one question from Michael Dorako of ESPN.com, a follow from him, another from him. Two questions later, Mark Long of the AP hit Urban with another Chris Doyle question. And then later, multiple additional questions about Chris Doyle. That's the kind of persistence that maybe he didn't expect in Jacksonville, that maybe he had become accustomed to life in a college town where you're the emperor and you really don't answer to anyone. He had to answer to the media, and given what happened on Friday night, the ultimate Friday news dump after 11 p.m. Eastern, out came the statement from the Jacksonville Jaguars that Chris Doyle had resigned. Only one day after he was announced as the director of sports performance, Chris Doyle came to us this evening to submit his resignation. We have accepted. Chris did not want to be a distraction to what we were building in Jacksonville. Here's the key. We are responsible for all aspects of our program and, in retrospect, should have given greater consideration to how his appointment may have affected all involved. In other words, he didn't resign voluntarily. We know we screwed up. He is now gone, and we shouldn't have hired him in the first place. And I was stunned that it came so quickly. And my guess is, see, one of the things you don't deal with at the college level is an owner. My guess is Shad Khan wasn't happy with what transpired, and some pressure was applied to make this happen on Friday night, Peter.
Maybe. I had two reactions when I woke up Saturday morning. Number one, I would be extremely surprised. I'm not saying it didn't happen. I would be extremely surprised if this was prompted by this coach coming to Urban Meyer and saying, you know, I don't want to make you guys look bad. I'm going to resign. I mean, really? Are you saying that after you get all these questions at the press conference, after Rod Graves of the Fritz Pollard Alliance with a very significant statement, very significant statement, talking about how this is a great example of the good old boys network. I've known this guy for 20 years. That Rod Graves statement, I can tell you, was significant. But my biggest takeaway is that you know, there's nobody in that organization, Mike, who can say to Urban Meyer, they're looking at Urban Meyer as a demigod, okay? Nobody in that organization can say, hey, coach, this is a horse crap decision. You can't do it. You can't do it. And maybe he'll say, hey, go sit in your cubicle or whatever. But he's in the NFL. Can you imagine? This is a guy who got ran out of Ames or Iowa City, Iowa. And you think coming into the NFL that he's going to be an acceptable hire? Is there nobody in the organization who said, now, you know, Urban, you know, like, there's probably only about 1,000 people, you know, who can do what this guy does. And maybe he is the best. But you know what? We're going to have to get the second best or the fourth best because we can't do this. We can't hire this guy. Now, Mike, there's one other thing I think to really remember in this. And that is that I don't know that Urban Meyer, other than having Jimmy Johnson as his NFL godfather, I don't know that he has a lot of people in the NFL who are sort of putting their arms around him and saying, hey, here's my advice about this, here's my advice about that. And maybe he's not asking for it. Urban Meyer needs someone in his organization that before he makes a decision like this, he just calls and says, hey, what do you think of this? That's what he needs. And he might think he has that now, but he doesn't have that now. And he needs one of those people.
We all need one of those people in our lives who can tell us when we're about to do something extremely stupid so we don't do it, because sometimes you develop a blind spot. Two quick comments. First, we played the clip from Urban Meyer from Thursday. And he said that he's known Chris Doyle for 20 years, dating back to when I was the head coach at Utah, and he was the number one strength coach. Well, that creates the impression that they actually work together. They never work together. Chris Doyle was at Utah in 1998 for 1 year, went to Iowa after that, and was there ever since until whatever it was that transpired last year that resulted in him accepting a buyout. He's denied any responsibility, but it was an investigation involving some racially charged statement and mistreatment of players. But Meyer was there 5 years later. He created the clear impression they worked together. They had never in their careers worked together. He just knew of him. He'd never worked with him. And he may know him, but he never worked with him. I mean, it's different to know somebody as part of the broader coaching industry. It's another thing to grind with him every single day, to observe him, to see who he is, how he is, who he's really about, what he's really about. And he created the impression that he had that relationship, and he didn't. And secondly, this is the thing that caused me to fall out of my chair on Saturday morning. Because Friday night, they send out the statement. 11:18 p.m. Eastern is when it arrived in our email box. Statement from Jaguars head coach Urban Meyer. The statement we showed on the screen. Saturday morning, 9:30, 10 o'clock, they reissued it to add Trent Baalke's name to the statement, the general manager of the team, inadvertently omitted from the statement. Are you kidding me? You're going to dust this thing off and reissue it and create the impression that Urban Meyer doesn't want to take the heat by himself. Somebody else has to bear the blame for this. So it's not just from me expressing regret. It's also from Trent Baalke, who should be the guy who's in position to say to Urban, we probably shouldn't do this. And for all we know, did say it. His name gets attached to it on Saturday, so the black mark goes on his resume as well, Peter.
The whole thing is just, you know, Mike, it's just sloppy. The entire process was sloppy. And that's one of the reasons why I think the Jaguars look terrible in this whole thing. They look absolutely terrible. And they need somebody to come in and help Urban Meyer and Trent Baalke and Shad Khan clean up the mess. That's all there is to it. They're missing something. They're just missing something. And the entire process just puts an exclamation point on that.
Turns out Poppy was a little sloppy, is what you're saying. And did anybody get that?
Get rid of the couch, Mike.
You got to wash your hands after you use the bathroom, and don't sit down on someone's couch and pee. All right. Now, there is a guy who will be joining the organization most likely who won't necessarily be in position to be Urban Meyer's Jiminy Cricket, but he will be a guy who could go a long way to make people not pay attention to the various issues and struggles and challenges that may arise. Trevor Lawrence had his pro day workout on Friday. We'll tell you what happened there and what happens next for Lawrence when PFT Live continues right after. The Jacksonville Jaguars with the ultimate hype video for the Trevor Lawrence pro day workout. They're not guaranteed to take him. Someone else could make them an offer they can't refuse. But the Jaguars holding that first overall in the pick. They worked very hard to earn that first overall pick in the draft, and they're going to take full advantage of it. So Trevor Lawrence throws for scouts on Friday because he needs shoulder surgery on his non-throwing shoulder. He'll have that tomorrow. Ian Rappaport of NFL Media said that he's going to require 5 to 6 months to recover, but he should be ready for training camp. I did the math, and my math skills have eroded over the years. If it's 6 months, he won't be ready for training camp. So we'll see how this all plays out, and we always assume that every surgical procedure is going to be successful with no complications or other issues, but, you know, surgery is surgery, Peter. That's Emmy-level observation by me, but you don't know what's going to happen. Nobody knows what's going to happen. So let's just see how it plays out. But look, Trevor Lawrence, the presumptive number one overall pick in the draft, he likely will be. The only question in my mind is whether or not somebody else loves him enough to offer the Jaguars so much that they can't say no to it.
I mean, what would that be? You know, it could be that that Urban Meyer might think, he might think that Justin Fields or one of the other quarterbacks in the draft is 88, 92% of Trevor Lawrence. And let's say we get offered the ability to trade down and still get our number one quarterback, and then get two or three extra first round picks. So you don't close the door on it, but Mike, it just seems exceedingly unlikely that Trevor Lawrence is going to be anything but a Jaguar come late April.
Well, and one idea that's fascinated me from the moment that we became aware that Deshaun Watson wants out of Houston, what would the Jaguars do if offered Watson for the first overall pick? I always lean on the side of the sure thing. Not that the Jaguars would want to give Trevor Lawrence to a team in the division or the Texans would want to do the same thing, but that flip-flop, it's fun to think about. Highly unlikely it would happen.
It's but one that's of the most kind of fascinating. It'd be one of the most fascinating trades in history.
Well, and if you're the Jaguars, you're getting the sure thing. You're getting the guy who has proven he can play, because with Trevor Lawrence, we still don't know and we won't know until he shows up and plays. Another hour of PFT Live still to come. We'll be right back.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.